Stony Man Farm, Virginia.
Stryker, where the hell have you been?
Here and there, Bear. You know, out in the provinces.
Kurtzman glanced at the glaring Latin American headlines scrolling across his computer.
That wouldn't have been the province of Cordoba, would it?
Yeah, as a matter of fact. Listen, Bear, I'm kind of stuck out here in the sticks. What's the political situation?
Both countries are in an uproar. The U.S. Embassy in Argentina has been attacked twice. There have been two battles with terrorists in Argentina since then. Of course, it turns out those battles were with you. You have the president's trust, but he's starting to wonder what the hell is going on. Are they really Nazis, Stryker?
Oh, they're Nazis, all right. Third-generation South American Nazis. But they've got the mentality down pat. They're true believers, and they've been groomed to rule. Los Facones are absolutely for real.
So what do you intend to do?
There are going to be emergency elections in Argentina next week. We have exactly 3 days before these guys take over. I have very limited resources. What's the tactical situation on your end?
Kurtzman stared at his map.
The country's buttoned up tight, at least as tight as a South American republic can be. Police and military roadblocks have been set up throughout the provinces. Every military installation from the border with Brazil to Tierra del Fuego is on the highest state of alert. They're waiting for the terrorists to make their next move, which means they're waiting on you.
Tell me something I don't know.
Governor DeVolcan is on television every day making speeches, denouncing terrorism and directing thinly veiled blame on the United States for what's happening. A lot of other nations are getting upset at the idea of the war against terrorism spilling over onto their shores. Politically, this is turning into a goat screw.
What about the Battle of the Training Camp? What kind of fallout is being generated?
Brigadier General Gonzalez was found with a bullet in his head in his own office. They're saying he was assassinated in retaliation for his destruction of the terrorist base.
He was, but not by terrorists. His men were holding down the base. General Vaughn will take over, and no investigation of the camp will come to anything. Once Del Vulcan and Vaughn come to power, no investigation of anything will come to anything. We have 72 hours before these guys go legit. Then they go after Israel and God knows what else.
Stryker, if you do anything, you'd better make it fast. I don't know if the president will support a termination once the elections are a done deal. The United States has always been very leery about removing elected heads of state.
I know that, Bear. But these guys go down. I don't care whether they're wearing a uniform or a crown, or whether it's tomorrow or after Super Tuesday. Nazis go down wherever I find them, with or without sanction.
Mac, you assassinate the freely elected president of Argentina, and your official status could be persona non grata.
Boland's relationship with the United States government was an arm's-length affair. There was always the lurking fear that sooner or later the President of the United States would decide that Mac Boland had gone too far or become a liability.
I hope you have a plan.
I do. But I have to find Del Vulcan and General Vaughn first, and my recon options are severely limited.
Now, finding them won't be hard.
The Stony Man cyber whiz considered the problem.
But getting at them, that's going to be the trick.
Where are they?
Governor Del Vulcan and General Vaughn are conducting high-level meetings to present their new national security plan before the Assembly. They're going to publicly present them Monday.
And Tuesday they get elected. I don't want to try and take them in the Capitol. Way too much can go wrong. Where are they now?
All right. Governor Del Vulcan has a mansion in the hills outside of Cordoba City. It's isolated, which is in your favor. But the governor's surrounded by an army of bodyguards.
That means Facone street muscle.
True, but General Vaughn is there, too. He's got the place surrounded by his Fuerza de Paz troopers.
Any word on numbers?
Kurtzman glanced about at the vast amount of data he had collected.
I can't get any hard intel on that. Barb's been working every angle she can, but we just don't have anyone in position in Cordoba or an available satellite. I'd say you have to plan to run into the enemy in platoon strength. They probably have at least one or two helicopters on the premises. And if they're Fuerza de Paz, they'll be armed and hot on the pad.
Any more good news?
Yeah.
Kurtzman glanced at his map again.
Like I said, there are roadblocks all over the province. I can see only two roads that lead to the Del Vulcan mansion. Those will be blocked at least a mile out, and I'd count on encountering armor at both points if I were you.
What's the situation on friendlies?
Well, now that's about the only real good news. Dovalkin made a big televised show of giving his staff paid time off until after the elections for their safety. The public's eating it up. They're calling him the savior of the nation, and he hasn't even been elected yet.
They know we have to hit them before the elections. Vaughn and Dovalkin are daring us to come and get them.
Yeah, they're waiting for you.
Let's not keep them waiting. Send me the coordinates and any intel you have at all on the surrounding area.
You going to let me in on this little plan of yours?
You really want to know?
Kurtzman considered the question and Boland's tone very carefully.
Yes?
Kurtzman's eyes slowly widened as Boland revealed his plan. It didn't take long. It wasn't much of a plan at all. It was suicide. Spectacular suicide, granted. But suicide nonetheless.
Stryker, you need professional help.
What I need is a regiment of United States Marines, but I'll be happy to put in for a Section 8 when I get back.
Get back? So far, you haven't said jack about how you intend to extract.
You really want to know?
Kurtzman thought about that, too.
No.
Olin told him anyway. Kurtzman stared at the map of Cordoba on his computer screen.
Jesus H. Christ.
Sauce Cordoba Mountains. Bolin clicked off the line with Kurtzman. He turned to Kubrick. The CIA man held an ice pack to his face. His contusions were slowly diffusing from purple and black to blues and yellows.
How many FN-2000s do we have left?
Well, not to be a dick about it, but you slagged two of them. Ammo we've got, but we're low on grenades. For that matter, the batteries of the integrated firing systems are low on all of them. And I have no way to recharge them.
All right, you keep yours.
Boland turned to Enciso.
You take Dudley's.
Boland took the map the farm had faxed him. He tapped the two marks Kurtzman had made with the pencil.
We're here. Vaughn and Dovalkin are here. They'll have at least a platoon around them. I'm expecting helicopters and armor. I want to break us down into two teams. Jack, you're with me.
The executioner tapped the map.
The rest of you are going to be Team 2. Dudley, how are your legs?
Not good. I wish it was different, but not good.
Dudley glared helplessly at the aluminum crutches by his side.
These escape sticks aren't going to get me anywhere far or fast. Put me in a car or park me behind a rock with a rifle. I'll do my best for you.
Boland shook his head.
I need you more mobile than that.
Dudley's eyes widened.
Well, I am open to suggestions.
Yeah.
Kubrick eyed Boland warily.
And I'm still waiting to hear what this plan is of yours.
I know, but I needed to work out the details first.
Boland gestured behind him at the Pucara counterinsurgency plane parked beneath the trees.
It's pretty simple, really. Jack and I will be in the plane.
Okay, that's all well and good, but what exactly is the plan?
Yeah.
Dudley leaned forward.
And what are the rest of us supposed to do? How do we sneak through the Argentine military checkpoints?
I agree.
Santiago scratched his head.
My uniform will not get us past the checkpoint, and there is probably a warrant out for my arrest by now. We won't get anywhere in a car.
No, you guys aren't driving.
Kubrick frowned.
We only got one plane and two seats.
That's right, and it's over 100 miles to the Dovalkin mansion from where we are now, and all the roads are covered, so...
Boland grinned and stabbed his pencil into the map.
Here's what we're going to do.
Boland laid out his plan. There was absolute silence until he was finished. Grimaldi and Enciso glanced at each other. They were both very familiar with Boland's improvisational skills, but the big guy's plan caught even them flat-footed. Kubrick, Dudley, and Santiago did not have the same luxury. This was their first experience of a Mac Boland rolling war. They were absolutely appalled. Kubrick stared at the map and then at Boland.
Mister, you are nuts.
Right.
Boland grinned and looked at Dudley.
Dudley?
Mama always said white folks was crazy.
Dudley shook his head.
She was right.
Good. We're all in agreement then.
He won't attack.
Governor Del Valken stood on his balcony and gazed out over the grounds. The stars were fading and the sky was beginning to turn purple. The mansion was built like a Spanish colonial fortress. It was nestled against the side of a hill. Beyond the cleared land and the corral, forest land and hills stretched in all directions. A pair of armed Huey helicopters currently occupied the corral. An M113 armored personnel carrier dominated the circular drive and was flanked by a pair of gun jeeps. Armed men swarmed the grounds. Gustavo Vaughn swirled the cognac in his glass meditatively.
Of course he will. He has to.
They will fade away.
The governor nodded to himself.
It is just another failed Yankee secret operation in South America.
Ordinarily, I would agree with you, Nano. But this Yankee is not just another operator. He discovered us in Africa and followed us halfway around the world to our own backyard. Freddy, Roby, and Sufferhead are dead. You and I remain. Today, we go to the capital, and you will address the assembly and the nation, proposing Roby's economic plan. Tomorrow, you will be elected president. Trying to take us in the capital would be extremely difficult. His job is not finished, and he has a very tight schedule to keep.
He did not attack yesterday, nor the day before. He did not attack last night.
Del Valken tossed back his drink. He let the fire of the brandy take off the pre-dawn chill.
He is out of time.
The day has yet to begin.
Vaughn gestured meaningfully toward the view with his drink.
And I would not stand out on the balcony like that if I were you.
Del Valken stood silhouetted where he was. Vaughn's eyes hardened beneath his Neanderthal brow. More and more, the governor was becoming uncontrollable. In the past few years, Vaughn had been forced to spend more time coddling Del Valken, while at the same time devoting inordinate amounts of time, effort, and finances to covering up the results of the governor's moral failings. God only knew what kind of president he would make. Being the mind behind the figurehead was to have been Roby's job. Goosey's eyes closed at the thought. His brother was dead. Los Facones had been based on a democracy. They were superior and destined to rule. That destiny was about to come to fruition. The inner sanctum of Los Facones had always operated as equals. Goosey considered his cousin. Freddy, Sufferhead, and Roby were dead, and Nano was becoming a liability. Goosey believed that it was possible that terrorists might assassinate President Del Valken, and in the face of such a threat, a military junta would be the only reasonable form of government to deal with the threat. The democracy was over. It was about to become a patriarchy. The next generation of Facones would be molded in Goosey's own image.
Is that one of yours?
Vaughn looked up as his train of thought was interrupted.
One of my what?
Planes.
Del Valken pointed.
There.
Vaughn stepped onto the balcony and squinted into the first orange rays of the sun. A plane was flying over the eastern hills. It was flying straight at them, and at high speed. Vaughn straightened. It was a Pucara counterinsurgency attack aircraft.
Good hell.
Vaughn seized his radio.
All units, engage the incoming plane. Shoot it down.
Tracers began to reach up into the dawn. The plane roared toward the mansion like some immense avenging insect. It made no attempt at evasive maneuvers. Its guns were silent. Infrared flares blossomed out from under its wings as one of the Fuerza de Paz troopers below fired a shoulder-launched surface-to-air missile. The missile streaked into the sky. Vaughn watched as its infrared seeker was distracted and veered into one of the flares. The missile detonated behind the incoming Cucada. The plane didn't even wobble. It just came straight on. Vaughn grabbed Del Valken's arm and yanked him back inside the mansion as the roar of twin engines shook the windows in their frames.
Here we go.
Every last warning light on the console flashed as Grimaldi pointed the Pucara's nose at the corral. A pair of helicopters was parked there, and one of them was already starting to take off. The second helicopter's rotors began threshing the air. Grimaldi put his reflex sight onto the first helicopter and squeezed his trigger. Flame erupted all around the fuselage as the machine guns ripped to life. Tracers streaked from the Pucara and converged on the rising helicopter. Grimaldi triggered a burst from his 20mm cannons, and that chopper shuddered and broke apart under the barrage. The Stony Man pilot kept the Pucara's nose pointed in the same line and engaged the second helicopter. Tracers flew toward him as the helicopter's door gunner fired back. He had one 30-caliber machine gun. Grimaldi had four. The helicopter rose a few feet in the air and listed to one side as Grimaldi hammered it. Grimaldi put a short burst from the cannons into the chopper. It burst into flames and fell. The Pucara shook and bucked. Tracers streaked from the riflemen on the ground. Bullets struck the armored cockpit. The rest of the plane was standard aircraft aluminum, and it rent and tore with the bullet strikes. Grimaldi ignored the incoming fire as he pointed his plane at the armored personnel carrier parked in front of the blazing mansion. Its three machine guns poured fire into the air. Sparks shrieked across the fuselage.
Shit!
The cockpit glass cracked and spiderwebbed as the heavy machine gun sought to hammer the Pucara out of the sky. Grimaldi lined up his nose with the armored vehicle. He poured tracers into the APC and was rewarded with sparks as the 30s bounced off the welded aluminum armor. Grimaldi unleashed his cannons. Blossoms of 20mm armor-piercing incendiary fire blew the APC out of existence.
Missile!
Yeah, I see it!
Grimaldi fired his flares as a streak of smoke and fire flashed up at them. The flares bloomed out to either side. The Argentine Army's anti-aircraft missiles were 20-year-old British technology, and exactly the kind of weapon the flares were made to defeat. The missile caromed off course as the infrared seeker was drawn irresistibly like a moth into the blinding sun of the flare. The missile detonated 100 yards behind them. Bolin craned his head.
Another missile!
Sorry, out of flares!
What?
The Pucara was in no shape to maneuver. Grimaldi aimed the plane at the mansion and judged the distance. Grimaldi put the reflex sight on the burning mansion and hit the autopilot.
Eject, Sarge! Eject! Eject!
Oh, shit!
Bolin reached down and ripped the ejection lever upward. The ejection bolts in the cockpit frame fired, and the battered canopy cut loose. The open cockpit instantly became a 200-mile-per-hour maelstrom. Bolin reached behind his head and yanked the face screen down. The seat fired. G-forces rammed Bolin against his seat as he rose up and away from the aircraft. The Pucara roared toward the mansion, trailing smoke and fire, and crashed into the balcony. The Pucara's fuel tanks ignited. The gunmen on the grounds in front of the mansion scattered as pieces of the plane rained down on them in a meteor swarm of flaming ruin. The chair beneath Bolin yanked as his chute deployed. He craned his neck around and saw Grimaldi descending toward the front of the house. Bolin grimaced as he looked forward again. The ejection seat he was occupying was also 20-year-old British technology. The seat didn't detach once the chute deployed. The seat and the chute were intimately committed to one another, which meant that the parachute was almost totally unsteerable. Bolin reached for the ropes anyway as he drifted down toward the burning mansion. His efforts did almost nothing to alter his course.
Here goes nothing.
Bolin yanked up his heels as he went straight into the flames. Instantly, his world was a burning orange and choking black hell. Heat seared him. There was no sense of direction as fire and smoke enfolded him. Bolin collided with something solid and spun violently. He burst out of the smoke and the sky twisted crazily. The seat tumbled and skidded across part of the remaining roof, and Bolin suddenly fell a dozen feet as he went over the side. The seat yanked against him as the chute took his weight again. Bolin looked up and saw that his canopy was on fire.
Oh, shit!
The silk above him blackened and parted, and Bolin suddenly lost lift. He and his metal chair struck the ground with bone-crashing force. The executioner lay stunned. Instinct took over as the remains of his parachute drifted down upon him like a burning ghost. Bolin hit his buckles and rolled as fiery silk sought to enshroud him. He rolled to his feet, slapping at the shreds of burning fabric that clung to him.
Shit! Shit! Shit!
The sun spilled golden light over the hills. The mansion was burning out of control. Guns were firing out front. The .44 Magnum Desert Eagle and the Beretta 93R machine pistol filled the executioner's hands as he spoke into his throat mic.
Jack, sit rep.
Enemy KIA's in squad strength. Enemy scattering beyond my position. Unknown number of hostiles still in the building.
Affirmative. Can you enter from your side?
Not from this side. She's burning like a Roman candle.
Affirmative. I'm holding the rear of the building. Can you assist?
Cooper, this is Chicago. ETA 30 seconds.
Affirmative. I'm on the west side of the mansion.
Inbound. West side.
Men came boiling out of the burning building. For the next 30 seconds, Bolin would be on his own. The expensive suits and handguns revealed the men to be Facon, high-level muscle and bodyguards. Bolin's pistols bucked in his hands as he put them in a one-man crossfire. Facon's fell. Argentina was cattle country. Bolin drifted to his left and put a massive stone grill between himself and his opponents. More men burst from the house. They knelt and fired and forced Bolin to take cover. So many pistols were firing. Bolin threw a pair of frags over the top among the shooters. Bolin rose with both pistols spitting lead in flames. Those who still stood toppled and fell. Bolin couldn't allow himself to be flanked out in the open by the next rush from the house. He had to put a cork in the bottle. Bolin ignored the writhing wounded on the ground and moved to the momentarily clear back door.
Chicago, I'm entering the house. Rear side.
Affirmative, Cooper. ETA 15 seconds. I got you safe.
Smoke crawled up from under the top edge of the doorframe and billowed upward. Bolin pulled his next-to-last frag and hurled it through the door. The oozing smoke pulsed with the detonation and earned Bolin a wounded scream from within. Bolin entered running at a crouch. The kitchen was clear, save for a man on the floor clutching the red ruin of his face. A foot of black smoke covered the ceiling. Heat washed through the room. Bolin leaped over the man and moved deeper into the burning mansion. He caught movement in the corner of his eye and fired through the open doorway of a living room. Multiple automatic rifles chewed the wall where his head had just been.
Chicago!
Back door is burning up. Where are you?
Bolin glanced back. The kitchen behind him had lit up like kindling, and he couldn't go back the way he had come. Bolin drew his last frag and went forward.
Chicago, there's a floor-to-ceiling window 30 feet from the back door. Try busting in there. I'm closing on it.
Affirmative.
Bolin threw his grenade into the living room and leaned back to put a wall between himself and the lethal swarm of fragments. He lunged into the room with his pistols hammering in his hands. Two Fuerza de Paz troopers went down. A third ripped at Bolin with his rifle on full auto. Bolin threw himself down as bullets cratered the wall behind him. The executioner glanced up as the lone horseman of the apocalypse came through the living room window in a storm of shattered glass. With only seats for two in the plane and the roads blocked, Enciso, Kubrick, Dudley, and Santiago had been forced to cross the 100 miles between the rented ranch and the Facon's mansion on horseback. It would have been a particularly rough ride for Dudley with a bullet hole in each leg, but the man was here and came through the window like a one-man wrecking crew. He held the reins in his teeth. His twin 41 Magnum revolvers rolled like thunder in his hands. The remaining two riflemen fell with their skulls crushed by 41 caliber flatheads.
I owe motherfucking silver!
Bolin rose and slid fresh magazines into his pistols.
What's the situation outside?
Dudley's smile was ugly.
Total chaos, but little more than mop-up. When the plane took out half the house, most of the remaining Facon muscle outside beat it for the bushes.
The CIA man shook his head with grim finality as he started shoving fresh shells into his pistols.
And they ran right into me and the professor. Santiago linked up with Jack and Rafe, and they're taking out the remaining Fuerza de Paz by the corral. Kubrick should be here with us any second.
Bolin was already firing. A bullet hit his armor as Facons came out of the opposite hallway. They wept and choked from smoke inhalation, but they spilled into the living room shooting. Dudley snapped his partially loaded pistol closed, but his horse reared as a bullet struck it.
Whoa! Shit!
the CIA man was nearly thrown. Bolin kept his front sights on the open hall. The gunmen dropped as Bolin shot them down. Bodies piled up like cordwood in the living room as Bolin grabbed the reins of the rearing horse. Its eyes rolled in panic with the smell of fire and smoke and the pistol bullet that had creased its withers. The hallway beyond flickered and glowed Halloween orange as the fire crawled through the house. Bolin held the horse's head down as it bucked and spun.
Dudley, we've got to...
Mariano Del Valken bounded out of the hallway. His hair was on fire. Half of his movie star handsome face was bubbled and burned. His white teeth flashed, and his eyes gleamed with insanity. Backlit by the burning hallway, he looked like Satan himself. Bolin released the reins as the horse spun between himself and the governor of Cordoba. Del Valken raised a .45 automatic and shot Dudley in the chest. The CIA man jerked and sagged in the saddle as he took hit after hit. The governor reached him in a single leap. He clouted Dudley upside the skull with his empty automatic, and the CIA station chief toppled from the saddle right on top of Bolin.
Son of a bitch!
Bolin twisted aside beneath Dudley's weight and struggled to bring up his pistols. The slide of Del Valken's pistol chopped down into Bolin's left forearm. The 93R fell from his hand. Bolin saw stars as Del Valken backhanded him with his empty automatic. The governor wrapped one blackened and blistered hand around Bolin's right wrist and the other around his throat. He already had the strength of a world-class athlete. That strength was redoubled with his unleashed insanity. Bolin drove his knee into Del Valken and felt the body armor he wore beneath his charred suit. The rearing horse slammed into both of them with its shoulder. Bolin's gun hand came free. Del Valken's fingers vised down and pulled as if to tear Bolin's throat right off his neck bones.
La concha de la lora!
Bolin caught motion out of the corner of his darkening vision. He shoved the muzzle of the Desert Eagle into Del Valken's midriff. Del Valken was wearing armor, but he was still accepting over 1,400 pounds of energy with each bullet that struck him. The grip on Bolin's throat weakened, but not enough. Bolin brought his gun up for a headshot, but Del Valken grabbed for his wrist.
Kill you!
Yeah, I know!
Bolin let him. Del Valken pushed the pistol toward Bolin's head with insane finality. Bolin let the pistol come in, then twisted the muzzle beneath the wrist of the hand choking him. Bolin squeezed his eyes shut against the spray of blood and bone. The slide of the smoking Desert Eagle locked on empty. Del Valken staggered a step and blinked uncomprehendingly at the shredded stump of his right wrist. Bolin's burning lungs sucked air past his bruised trachea. He stepped forward and whipped his empty weapon across his adversary's temple. Del Valken's head rocked on his neck, and the insane light in his eyes went glassy. The executioner raised the 4.5-pound pistol like an axe and brought the butt down into the crown of Del Valken's skull. His eyes crossed as Bolin raised the pistol again, and bones splintered with the second blow. Mariano Lopez Del Valken fell with his blown pupils looking in two different directions. Bolin bent and put his hands on his knees as they began to buckle.
Your pistol appears to be empty.
What?
Bolin looked up. General Gustavo Vaughn stood in the living room. The last Falcon threw aside the sodden blanket he had covered himself with to escape the fire. Bolin considered the spare magazine for the Desert Eagle in his web gear. His eyes flicked to the fallen Beretta where it lay on the floor a few feet away. Gustavo Vaughn's inhumanly large hands opened, and his lips twisted into a smile that lit his brutal face. They both knew Bolin would never live to bring either gun into play. Bolin dropped the Desert Eagle. Vaughn's lips twisted in a sneer as he stepped forward.
Mercy?
No, you don't get any.
Vaughn halted as Bolin drew the 8-inch blade of a Nazi SS dagger. Bolin matched Goosey's smile for smile.
This belonged to your brother, Roby. I think you should have it.
Bond's smile froze on his face. His eyes narrowed to slits. His hand went to the ivory-handled dagger beneath his belt.
Oh, how I shall carve you. Eat shit.
Dudley teetered on his wounded legs. Blood soaked both his pant legs where his wounds had opened. His thumb shook as he cocked back the hammer on his 41 Magnum. The muzzle leveled 2 feet from Bond's eyebrows.
And die.
What?
Bond's hand closed around Dudley's wrists and yanked the muzzle aside.
Dudley! Cooper!
Kubrick came through the shattered remnants of the window with his FN weapon system leveled. Bond slammed his hand up into Dudley's crotch and lifted him over his head with grotesque ease. The giant section chief hurtled through the air like a 300-pound sack of potatoes and smashed Kubrick off his feet.
Fuck!
The two CIA men fell in a tangle of limbs. The rifle went spinning across the floor. Bolin flung his dagger and dived for the rifle. The ebony-handled dagger revolved through the air. Vaughn moved with a fluid speed that was horrible in a man so large. He jerked his head to one side, and the blade sliced across his cheek.
You bastard!
Bolin's hand closed around the grip of the FN-2000 as Vaughn's boot hit his ribs with horrific force. The blow smashed Bolin upright. His vision went white as Vaughn's right hand hit him in the chest like a train wreck. Bolin's body folded around Vaughn's fist and he sailed backward. Only his armor kept his rib cage from shattering like kindling. Bolin bounced off the wall and sat down hard on his haunches. Vaughn smiled again and drew his dagger.
Now!
Bolin reached down to his ankle. His skeleton-handled boot knife came out. He nodded as he tried to push himself to his feet.
Now!
Douglas Kubrick blindsided Gustavo Vaughn with every ounce of his 275 pounds, like the All-American nose guard he had been back in his school days in Buffalo. Kubrick slammed a forearm up under Vaughn's chin. The dagger slipped from the giant Nazi's hand. Kubrick followed up by crashing his elbow across his jaw. Vaughn reached out his left hand and enfolded Kubrick's face like a catcher's mitt. He lifted Kubrick up into the air by his head and heaved him into the horse. Kubrick thudded into the already panicking animal and fell beneath its flailing hooves. Bolin rammed his knife between Vaughn's ribs. The blade grated on bone and stuck. Vaughn swung his fist around. Bolin put up both arms to block and was thrown back against the wall again. He landed on his feet and came forward again. Vaughn ignored the knife in his side. He opened his fists as if he held a gift for Bolin in either hand.
Venga!
Bolin's hands stiffened into blunt spears as he closed.
Cooper!
Bolin's earpiece was gone, but he could hear Santiago shouting from outside the burning house.
Cooper!
Vaughn seized the reins of the rearing stallion. For half a heartbeat, Bolin was afraid Vaughn was going to throw the horse at him. Instead, the strong man scooped up his fallen dagger and vaulted himself into the saddle. The horse tried to throw him, but Vaughn held on and dug his boot heels into the horse's flanks. He spurred the stallion straight at Bolin. The dagger rose, glittering in his hand for the kill. Bolin lunged for the fallen rifle. The horse's hooves smashed the floor tiles as it bore down. Bolin's hand closed around the barrel of the fallen FN-2000 as the horse's mass blotted out the rest of the room. There was no time to shoulder the weapon or even get his finger on the trigger. Bolin swung the 8-pound rifle up and around like a bludgeon. The buttstock and action of the bullpup rifle shattered against Vaughn's skull. The charging horse buffeted Bolin aside with its shoulder and sent him spinning to the floor. Vaughn lay back in the saddle and nearly fell. He grabbed the saddle horn and righted himself. Santiago appeared on horseback in the empty frame of the window. Vaughn swung out an arm like a fire hose and clotheslined the police officer out of the saddle. Vaughn rode off into the dawn. Kubrick tried gathering himself from the floor.
Get Dudley out of here before you both burn to death.
Olin lurched to his feet, clutching the FN, and staggered to the window. Santiago lay on the ground. Olin levered himself up into the saddle of Santiago's horse and spurred after Vaughn. He examined his rifle as he rode. The stock was cracked and the butt was gone. The bolt handle stuck out at an unnatural angle and the magazine was dented and bent. The 40mm grenade launcher appeared to be intact. Olin cracked the breech and his insides grew cold. Kubrick had loaded a CS gas grenade for clearing rooms.
Shit.
Olin glanced down at the makeshift saddle scabbard Santiago had fashioned out of a blanket. Santiago had been carrying his Halcon submachine gun when he had been unhorsed. The saddle sack held the R-137mm tear gas launcher he had liberated from police headquarters in Cordoba. Olin was beaten and exhausted, and he was down to irritant gas. Gustavo Vaughn was one of the most powerful human beings the executioner had ever faced, and he had a blade. If he got away, he would become the undisputed dictator of Argentina. Olin couldn't let that happen. Vaughn was riding a wounded and exhausted horse, and the stallion was bearing a burden well over 300 pounds. The executioner spurred his horse toward the rising sun and swiftly began to eat the ground between them. Vaughn turned the bloody mask of his face to look back. He veered his horse for the trees. Olin raised his broken rifle to his shoulder. The rifle mechanism was useless, but when he punched the button, the electronic fire control module blinked to life. The range between them appeared in the reticule of the laser rangefinder. The elevation blinked with every jostle of the galloping horse, but elevation was a non-issue. All Olin had to be was close. Goosey spurred his horse mercilessly into the tree line. Olin closed to 40 yards. The broken rifle bucked against Boland's shoulder and yellow flame shot from the muzzle. The CS grenade burst beneath Vaughn's horse. The stallion spun as the skip-chasing bomblets shot out in four different directions from underneath it, spewing gas. The horse reared up and toppled over in terror and exhaustion, taking Vaughn with him. Boland tossed away the spent FN and drew the gas gun from Santiago's saddle. The revolving cylinder held five rounds of 37mm gas grenades. They were undoubtedly much less powerful than the hardcore CS rounds Olin and his crew had been carrying. Olin wrapped the sling around his arm and shouldered the weapon. General Vaughn rose to his feet. He looked at Olin bearing down on him. He reached out and closed his hands around a six-foot sapling and tore it up by the roots. Olin fired the Arwen. The grenade bucked and struck Vaughn in the chest. Gustavo Vaughn's massive form was enveloped in gas. General Vaughn stepped out of the gas cloud and swung the sapling. He didn't aim for Olin. The six-foot tree trunk scythed around and snapped across the knees of Olin's horse. The mare plunged nose downward as her front legs collapsed. Olin's boots left the stirrups, and the executioner flew through the air before he met the dirt with an ugly impact. Olin lay sprawled in the leaves and stared up at the sun shining through the branches overhead. He turned his head dazedly. His horse was pushing itself back to its feet. Both front legs were bloodied. The mare limped feebly and shook all over. Olin felt about the same as he pushed himself to his knees. Gustavo Vaughn stood a dozen feet away. He reeled on his feet. The Arwen's munition was a police, not a military round. However, the 37mm aluminum grenade had struck him in the chest at close to 600 feet per second. He had staggered out of the gas cloud, but a deep, bloody divot the size of a tea saucer oozed blood and gray gas where CS element had been embedded. Tears streamed down his face and his eyes were a mass of reddened veins. The hatred burning behind them was palpable. Vaughn pulled his dagger from his belt and stalked forward. The Arwen was still attached to Olin by the sling. Olin's legs felt as if they belonged to someone else as he levered himself to his feet. He brought the Arwen to his shoulder. The weapon bucked against him and Vaughn jerked and staggered as tear gas detonated against him. Olin tried again. Gustavo Vaughn disappeared in a gray cloud of gas. Olin stepped back as the cloud rapidly expanded outward. He waited with the fifth and final round in the cylinder. Goosey staggered out of the cloud like a drunk. His torso looked as if someone had teed off on his chest with a 9-iron. His eyes were nearly swollen shut.
I am going to kill you.
He raised the SS dagger overhead like an ice pick and came for Bola.
You said that already.
The executioner let him get within 6 feet and then shot him in the face. Vaughn's head snapped backward on his bull-like neck. His head vanished in a violent gray cloud. The giant stood for a moment within the expanding cloud and then toppled backward like a felled oak. Bolin stumbled away to put a safe distance between himself and the gas. He'd nearly had his throat ripped out and had inhaled way too much smoke. If he were caught in the tear gas, he would probably pass out and choke to death. Bolin leaned heavily against a tree and concentrated on the usually simple act of breathing. His horse shambled up to him, and he put a hand on its shaking muzzle.
Girl, I know how you feel.
Bolin looked back the way he had come. The mansion was belching black smoke into the sky. Horsemen were spurring across the open ground between the mansion and the trees. And Enciso had bought enough horses for each of them, plus several spares. Santiago, Kubrick, and Dudley sagged in their saddles. Grimaldi and Enciso led the battered little cavalry detachment. Bolin took his horse's reins. General Goosey Vaughn lay where he had fallen. The flesh of his brow, from his eyebrows to his hairline, had been brutally peeled back to bloody bone. His face was blue from strangling to death on the tear gas. Bolin stared into his glassy, dead eyes.
Halt!
Enciso reined his party to a halt beside Bolin and surveyed the scene.
We've got to get out of here.
You think?
I know.
What's the situation?
The mansion is burning to the foundations. A lot of the bad guys were bunkered inside. Not very many got out alive.
The Fuerza de Paz?
No, there are no more Fuerza de Paz.
Bolin took the reins of one of the spare mounts as Enciso tended to Bolin's horse. It took every last ounce of strength Bolin had to pull himself up into the saddle.
Los Facones?
Enciso's face was tight.
Like I said, not too many got out alive. They're Nazis. We didn't think taking prisoners was appropriate.
He glanced at General Vaughn's corpse.
I think you got the last one.
Choppers are probably on the way.
Bolin glanced up at the rising sun.
And it's 500 miles to the Paraguayan border.
He spurred his horse wearily.
We're out of here.
It was fun while it lasted.
Speak for yourself.
Bolin let Enciso take the lead. He led them into the trees in a ground-eating trot. In his career, Bolin had learned to sleep in almost any situation. He'd learned to sleep during hurricanes, shell bombardments, hanging from a sling attached to a flying helicopter at 2,000 feet, or at 18,000 feet beaten to a mountainside. Sleeping standing up and marching had been cake since boot camp. As he closed his eyes, he found sleeping in the saddle was no trouble at all.
The Executioner, Knight of the Knives, is a graphic audio production. Mac Bolin and The Executioner are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2004, Worldwide Library. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Jeff Baker, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Christopher Walker, Richard Rowan, Kate Torrey, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Casey Jones, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornette. Dialogue editing by Kyle Univer. Graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers, Kyle Univer, and Greg Reinfeld. Book adapted for graphic audio by Gerald Rudolph. If you enjoyed The Executioner, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Mac Bolin and Stony Man, available at Roadstops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for previews of other Graphic Audio thrillers.
The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Fire! Detroit, take out the trench!
Let the Red leaders in Washington know what has happened here, and that we're coming for them soon.
The Black Beam weapons have turned the tide of the rebellion, and infighting threatens to tear Russia itself apart.
Colonel, we have received confirmation that the plane carrying the Zabnov supporters from DC has crashed en route to Siberia.
Excellent. Do we have casualty reports?
Not yet, Colonel, but almost 50 were on the plane when it exploded.
I'm afraid I have bad news, sir. The Premier is as tough as a steps rat. He's just not succumbing to our treatments.
But you're still injecting him with the poison?
Yes, Your Excellency, but...
Increase the dosage. Double it, triple it.
But, sir, an autopsy would immediately detect that amount of...
I don't worry about the autopsy, Doctor. You worry about getting the Premier into the next life. Vasily must die within the next 2 weeks. Must!
But President Zhabnov isn't ready to give up.
My own scientists have successfully created brainwashed Americans, which we will send out to destroy the American cities.
Pavlov Fortress is armed to the teeth. They're protecting the place with everything they've got.
Exactly! That's why we can't risk the particle beams.
Or a big strike force. But someone's got to go in.
Are you?
Yeah, me. I'm volunteering.
Now, Roxanne's journey will bring him face to face with evil itself. Colonel Kilov.
Ah, it's the perfect temperature. Now, Roxanne, this may sting, but the pain will stop as soon as you tell me the location of your Century City.
Doomsday Warrior 2, Red America. Available now on Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.